Good evening, dear ones. It is a great blessing to see all of your faces come up on the screen, that we come together with a shared intention in Christ. The Christ candle has been lit as a symbol of our intention, of the light that is always burning within us and throughout all creation. We may think that our relationships are necessary only for our emotional lives. And yes, of course they are. But they are also integral and important for collecting higher influences that can reach this planet. So this matters not only for ourselves, of course, but for all creation. By coming together like this in this way, this evening, we are in fact drawing influences, very high influences, that is food for ourselves and our planet. How blessed we are. And so our opening meditation this evening comes certainly from one of the brightest lights in evolutionary consciousness today, who is on our planet, still living, and whose birthday is this very day. And that is Ilia Delio, who we also have a personal relationship with. Happy birthday, Ilia. Our reflection comes from her newsletter that was published just Tuesday of this week. She says, "The universe is physically impregnated to the very core of its matter by the influence of divine nature. Everything is physically Christified, gathered up by the incarnate word as nourishment that assimilates, transforms, and divinizes. The world is like a crystal lamp illumined from within by the light of Christ. For those who can see, Christ shines throughout the cosmos and in matter. The term Christ signifies divine love incarnate throughout the whole of creation. Everything is born out of the love of God, expresses God's love, and is oriented to the fullness of the divine. Every aspect of created life, from energy particles to the stars, fish, bees, trees, and human persons, expresses the love of God and is dynamically oriented toward God. Everything that exists has a divine dimension to it. There is nothing profane below here for those who know how to see." So we can say amen to that and wish to have eyes to see and ears to hear. So now in this spirit of quietness and receptivity and wonder at the grandeur of the macrocosmos and the microcosmos, which we are fortunate enough to be studying and understanding, let us prepare ourselves again simply to listen deeply and allow wisdom to enter and to meet us wherever we are, to have our emotional center enlivened with valuation, and allow these conscious influences to reveal themselves to us, so that each of us receives just a word this evening that we need, that is exactly for our particular journey. We hand over all the complexities of the day. We hand over all the plans for tomorrow. We hand over all the anxieties of our hearts. We stand unencumbered before God and one another, totally present. Totally ready to receive. You may wish to read along with me the Lexio Rita, Divina reading, or simply listen to it, or perhaps gaze at the image and see how it speaks to you. You stretch over the heavens like a tent, your radiance covering the waters. You shine through the clouds and ride on the wings of the wind. The wind, like the breath of life, carries your word. Fire refines the dross of our souls. You set the earth on its foundations, strong and secure. You covered it with the deep like a garment, with many waters that life might come forth. You brought harmony to all the earth, that life might spring forth in abundance. All of creation looks to you. You send forth your spirit, and the earth, though not without turmoil, is renewed. You are ever present to us, even as the earth trembles. I will abandon myself into your hands as long as I live. You stretch over the heavens like a tent, your radiance covering the waters. You shine through the clouds and ride on the wings of the wind. The wind, like the breath of life, carries your word. Fire refines the dross of our souls. You set the earth on its foundations, strong and secure. You covered it with the deep like a garment, with many waters that life might come forth. You brought harmony to all the earth, that life might spring forth in abundance. All of creation looks to you. You send forth your spirit, and the earth, though not without turmoil, is renewed. You are ever present to us, even as the earth trembles. I will abandon myself into your hands as long as I live. You stretch over the heavens like a tent, your radiance covering the waters. You shine through the clouds and ride on the wings of the wind. The wind, like the breath of life, carries your word. Fire refines the dross of our souls. You set the earth on its foundations, strong and secure. You covered it with a deep like a garment, with many waters that life might come forth. You brought harmony to all the earth, that life might spring forth in abundance. All of creation looks to you. You send forth your spirit, and the earth, though not without turmoil, is renewed. You are ever present to even as the earth trembles. I will abandon myself into your hands as long as I live. Amen. And so it is. You are now invited to share with the movement of the word offered to you and give it to us as a gift. Yes, Sue, please.
So I heard you are present even when the earth trembles. And I work in a private school. We're getting ready to reopen. Mm. And this week we're having our preparations and our professional development. And it is really, really, I've been very stressed out. It is really hard this year. We're having to do all these extra things to try and keep everyone safe and keep ourselves safe. And it's really feeling difficult. And so this is just a reminder that even when it feels like my world is shaky and, you know, that God is there, I'm not doing it by myself.
Truly, Sue, and bless you in your work. Bless you. Karen Betts, please.
There we go. Sorry. what I heard was that I will be renewed, though not without turmoil. And in that I heard my need to participate in conscious labors and intentional suffering, that it's not all rainbows and lollipops, but that I will be renewed, yes. That the promise is that it's indeed the way I am made new.
Indeed. Thank you, Karen. Thank you. Lisa Morgan, please.
Yes. What I heard was a passage that resonated as something to the beginning of Genesis. Mm-hmm. I almost related to this as a passage that would have, it just seemed like a better beginning to the Bible to me. I like that there was not a use of the term God, and that there's an interpretation of what you is, that mm-hmm. there's not an imposed interpretation of that, and that whatever that is to you, and just the beauty of creation and the protection and how we participate and how there are laws. And so it was just beautiful. I mean, all of it was just a very, very touching passage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, truly. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
And Lee and Jackie.
Good evening. I heard the word you and the word your, and to me it's I have this sense it's to me it's self-remembering mm-hmm. when I'm addressing that to which we are referring when we use this word you or mm-hmm. your. Mm-hmm. That's all I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. Sharon Clark, please.
And can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Good evening.
It's good to see you, Sharon.
Oh, you also, and everyone. Mm-hmm. For me, the passage was so nurturing. It gave to me a place of phenomenal peace. Mm-hmm. That there is no doubting, no questioning. And the line that really struck me was, all looks to you. Mm. And again, whether we are doing that consciously or unconsciously, that aspect that Christ is within each of us, it's always returning to what is greater than ourselves. But yes, it was just a very nurturing passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharon. Frank, please. You have to unmute. You're still muted. Jill, can you unmute Frank? There you go.
I was taken by the entire passage, but particularly captured and enlivened with by the line that said, all creation looks to you. Mm-hmm. You send forth your spirit, and most particularly, that the earth, though not without turmoil, mm-hmm. is renewed. In this time of turmoil, it is easy to lose hope or faith or to be diminished, and this speaks to that beautifully. Very, very settling.
Yes. Thank you, Frank. Esther, please.
Does that work?
Yes.
Perfect. Sorry. I love this passage where it says, you're ever present to us. And it says, even as the earth trembles, I will abandon myself into your hands. And ever present means even beyond my physical body. So, and then I imagine myself being in that presence, ever present, and I can almost see even beyond my own physical finite death. So it's forever and ever, ever present. Seems so expansive and so nurturing for my soul.
Mm. Thank you, Esther. Thank you.
Thank you.
Leanne, please.
I heard, I will abandon myself unto your hands. And in that, I heard third force, and I could feel the presence of third force when I abandon myself and let God enter and take control, then third force happens and comes in.
Indeed. Indeed. Thank you, Leanne. Lauren.
I heard the fire that refines the dross of my soul. Mm. And dross is sometimes means sludge, the foam that boils. That and since I find myself boiling a lot, it's happening. It's not exactly comforting, but at least it's reassuring to know that there's that Christ is the fire that actually refines the scum that my soul sometimes comes up with.
Yeah. Thank you, Lauren. Anyone else? We have time for one more. Well, the passage speaks beautifully to an ordered cosmology, an ordered universe, with Christ radiating through all, as Ilya told us. So thank you for everyone who shared and everyone who listened deeply with the ears to hear. How blessed we are to hear together. So tonight we do continue our study of cosmology, that vast subject with its immutable laws. And I'm pleased to introduce Donald, who is going to take us on this journey of discovery. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Marianne. Hello, work friends. Well, we left off last week. We left off with the beautiful prayer and writing of Gurdjieff that was the following: wholly affirming, wholly denying, wholly reconciling, transubstantiate in me for my being. And our exercise for the week was to study the law of three at work in our lives or events and identify various forces at work. Doing so with a friendly and curious attitude towards second force. So we'll have some time in just a moment to hear what your experiences of this were for the week. And hopefully, like all work exercises, all work studies, that we were working with delight, enjoying it, and not taking it heavily, and especially when it comes to second force. So just as a brief review, we said that the first force is what I want. And second force is what would resist it, or what would stop that from happening, what would prevent it. And the third force is a reconciling, and what would bring it together and manifest. And it would not be uncommon that with acquired conscience, that is our personality, that we would use life forces on a horizontal level as our third force. But we're called upon for something much deeper, much higher order, and that is to use work ideas and blessed ways of reconciling the two forces. And so we're at the point where we can talk about some of the things that we've learned this week. And with any time that we're reporting, it's always good if we leave out the names of those that may be involved in the particular manifestation, the exercise, so we can kind of protect the names of the innocent, if you will, and really just talk about the experience itself and what you observed in that. So I welcome you to flesh out and anchor outside of yourself anything that you learned or ideas that were useful for you in the study of the Law of Three over the last week. Go ahead in the participants area. If you select the participants on the right side, you'll see names come up, and you can also have the opportunity there to raise your hand by opening up the three dots at the bottom right-hand corner.
Can I share, Donald?
Yes, Marianne. Thank you.
I don't have the ability to do the share hand since I'm one of the hosts. But I had an experience that I'd like to share with you and our friends, and maybe you can clarify something for me. I was on vacation last week with my family and extended family and dogs and assorted beings, and I won't name the names of all those innocent ones, but let's just put it this way. There was a lot of energy in my atmosphere. So my aim for the week was to be love. And that was it, just to be love. And what I found was no second force. What I found was that by being love, I was third force. And I was repeatedly in situations where I was third force. Now, is that correct, if you will? It was a curious phenomenon, and it caused me to wonder if being love was a holy reconciling force of the cosmos. That's what its purpose was. And somehow, if we are fortunate enough to have that energy come and meet us, then we can be in that situation where we are the reconciling force. So I would be interested in your response, or did I miss a beat somewhere?
I would say you nailed it. Yes. When we have such a lofty aim to be love, and in an aim like that, it's my experience with it is not something, it's not an aim that can be housed in outer parts of centers. It needs to be housed deep inside of centers where the mechanical parts or the parts of our personality that do not want to work cannot, they cannot get in touch with it. Mm-hmm. And so it, in these inner parts of centers, it conducts the higher influences from the higher centers. Mm-hmm. And in a case like that, why can't it be possible for my first force, what I want, to be love, and the reconciling force to be love, to be the same, amidst all of the turmoil of the dogs and the and the people and critters and everything else like that uncomfortable setting? Why can't they be the same? And I believe that they can be.
Yes.
Yeah. And your experience sounded like that.
It was obviously something beyond my normal I self. It came from above.
Yes.
And was a gift. It was a gift, I'll just put it that way. But it caused me to really ponder the whole nature of the cosmology, of the cosmos itself, and the Christ-like Ilya's message truly is there, and being mm-hmm. in that, that's it. Yeah. That's it, yeah. Yeah.
So as you were talking, one of the things that I was pondering is the idea of the second lateral octave of this.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I thought of that too.
Yes. Yes. So for those who are listening in on this, you're saying, what the heck are they talking about, this second lateral octave? Several weeks ago, Peter talked about the great ray. And the great ray starts out with the absolute as the do, as the initiating force. And then we introduce the idea that there is a lateral octave, a second octave, which we are under the influences of, and where the sun is, if you will, the absolute, the beginning, the do of the octave. And in that particular octave, man shows up and we're called to something higher, where the work says that man's a self-developing organism. Our calling is to be at the level of the sun. When we're at the level of the sun, we are radiating love. We become the sun, the new absolute of another lateral octave. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the co-creating in Christ. So we have the love of the human experience, we have the love of the sun, and we have the love of God. It was a good vacation you had.
Yeah, it was a very good vacation. It was. Yeah. It was. And yet, yeah. If I told you all the events on the horizontal level, they could be second force, but I didn't experience it that way.
Yeah, wonderful.
It was truly a gift, grace. Yeah.
Thank you for leading off with that, Marianne.
Yeah. It was my pleasure. Thank you, Donald.
You're welcome. Deborah Hale, please.
It's actually Don.
Hello, friend. It's good to see you both together.
I had an experience that I'm also curious about, and it's kind of got an interesting equivalency in an experience secondary to the first experience, which was I was conscious. My question all week had been, the center of gravity question was, what is the fourth thing that is created once we are third force of the work? Once we bring third force of the work in, we create a fourth fourth experience. And so what happened, nothing happened for the first few days as I was observing this, and I was just continuing to watch it. And the continued effort, I realized I felt the force of working with this growing in me. And sure enough, as I sat down for a sit a couple of days ago, it all opened up for me. And of course, I had to let it all go. not wanting to write it down or try to remember it. And the gift of that, of course, was when I came out of my sit, there was even more experience to it. And what happened was, when I remembered the work principle when I was engaged in the first and second force, I have a right not to be negative, and I can work. I experienced the first conscious shock come down in this third force, and what I experienced was that the third force of the work seemed to become first force of the next part of the octave, as opposed to when I'm asleep or mechanical and then life is my third force. I keep recurring. I keep repeating the same experience. But when I'm working, this fourth thing that is created seems to come down. The third force comes into the triad and becomes the first force of something new.
That's right.
And it was, it's kind of, that's the best way I can describe it. But when I was in the middle of my sit, all of a sudden it occurred to me that when I'm doing my sitting prayer and I recognize that I'm on a thought or a sensation or a feeling, that's first force. Observing it, recognizing it is the second force to that in this particular triad. And so what is the third force? And that's the sacred word. And what the interesting experience was when I realized it this time was I don't go back to center. I go to center. It's a new level of center.
Yes.
And so I realized in that experience that each time I work, each time I remember myself and make efforts, this new piece that's created, is it possible it could be expanded being? So instead of coming back to center, the center I left in centering prayer, I'm coming back to a new center because my being is different each time this happens.
Yes, that's beautiful. So Don, in we remember the diagram of the three-story house, okay? And in the top story, we've got the circle that's representing the intellectual center and another circle that's representing the higher intellectual center. And in the middle story, we've got the emotional center and another circle with the higher emotional center. And in Gnosis, there's a beautiful diagram depicting how these two circles of the emotional center, the middle center, the middle compartment, how they begin to come together and then they begin to overlap and become one to the point where there's just in the middle, the emotional center, because of the purification that you were just referring to, it becomes the higher emotional center.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never seen it outside of Gnosis.
Yeah.
But when I saw that, I thought, that is my experience right there of the growing infusion of the centers.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes, and you described it beautifully. We become that, but then, of course, that's the new first force of that's what I want to be, and, of course, there's going to be resistance to that. But just as Marianne has experienced, your same aim, your same love, is continuing to convert as the third force. And so the two just continue to grow more and more as we grow in Christ. Does that reconcile with what your experience is as you just described it?
Brilliant. Absolutely. It's a beautiful diagram that I can see, and I'll go look at Gnosis and find it to see it too. But it's exactly described it in a form that's better than the words I could use. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Nice. Really nice. Now, so there's one more layer to that, too. And in that final diagram of the three-story house, the intellectual center stays where it is, and the higher intellectual center stays where it is, and they end up converging into the middle single circle in the center. And I found that was very illuminating in watching our experience as with our psychological transformation.
That's amazing, because you just described my experience last week of working with the ray, using my intellectual center to read initially, especially when I started in the work, reading the all of these commentaries on the cosmology, looking at the diagrams, It was really, really difficult. It was thick. It was new. But I just kept just reading it over and over, having to direct my attention until finally I felt I could see the pictures, and my emotional center started drawing me toward it. So what you just described in the diagram is what I experienced, because it moved from my intellectual center, the intellectual part of my intellectual center, into my emotional part of emotional center, which then could move me back into where I am now, moving back into the higher parts of my intellectual center with all of this. It feels like, does that sound like what you just said?
Wonderful, Don. Yeah. Thank you for the effort that you put into continuing to work with the ideas. You know, Nickel in the commentaries talks about how little force we have to think from the cosmological points of view, that we've got very little force to do that because it is not something that's in our awareness, and it's not part of what we are usually exposed to. But it can change our experience as a human to be clearer about the possibilities of the manifestations, how things are created and how they're ordered in our universe. It explains so much.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Don. Suzanne Sanders, please.
Hi. So I had an observation of second force, but I also have a question. So I've been working with boundaries, and I really am trying to reconcile what boundaries are, or what not self is and what boundaries are, because I can very easily lose myself in other people. And it is in my mind a very selfless, open-hearted thing that I do, or an I does, I don't know, or a no self does. And it's an experience of waking up all of a sudden and going, oh, I don't have any more energy to be this thing for another person, or give of myself, I guess. The observation that I had was around work clients. And I've been working on boundaries there. And I've been working on really recognizing my intuition and listening to my intuition and working with the right types of people and doing the projects that I really like. But also, I've really just been trying to understand what opportunities are coming my direction, and really accepting them when I feel like there's a lesson to be learned for me. So I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to discern really what all of these things that God is trying to show me, because the client came in and I immediately had some alarm bells going off. That was, he had an attitude of, what can you do for me? And I really questioned the opportunity. I kind of went back and forth with the person who connected us, and I decided to take the assignment because I felt like there was a lesson. I felt like I needed to learn something. And so I took the assignment, and I was, you know, there was more alarm bells around them wanting me to take on extra hours, which I knew that I couldn't do. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't need to do that. And I communicated that with them, but I was like, let's see if I can manage some more hours, and then realized, no, I can't, and I don't want to. And so I put up my boundaries, and I gave him, or his counterpart, kind of, this is what I'm going to do this week while she was on vacation. And I laid it out very firmly with them. This is what I'm going to do. And then the second force was him coming in. This was Friday, and the timeline was accepted and everything. And then he came in and was trying to get me to do more work, or trying to get updates from me, and it was on Monday, and I had given him all of this on Friday. And so I had immediate rage over that, like a really severe rage. And I didn't, you know, I responded fine. I didn't, you know, I didn't respond in a way that, not too badly. I was a little snippy in the fact that I said, well, it's only Monday, so what kind of update do you want? But I wasn't that bad. I really took a moment to really ponder it. And during my journey group, it dawned on me. Somebody was talking about having this conversation with the salesperson on the phone and holding tension and not responding in a way that he wanted to respond, that he could have really responded. And something really turned in that conversation. And it really made me understand that this was second force. And what this guy was giving me, and I was co-creating the experience because I was expecting him to be like this. And so I co-created the experience so that I could learn how to respond differently when somebody comes at me in this way. And so that was a great aha moment. But I guess my question is to you is how do I want to be giving with an open heart. I want to be externally considering to people, but sometimes I don't have all the energy for others, and I don't know what it is that, you know, the difference between no self and the healthy self, I guess, is what I'm really having a hard time understanding.
Well, Suzanne, let's see if we can break it apart just a little bit and identify, because it sounded like there were multiple triads happening there. Right? And in fact, it also sounded like your client was first force and you were second force for a while. And then there was a mediating force that has been involved. You initially started with a first force statement and the account became the second force. So let's ask the question first. What is it that you wanted? What was the first force? What did you want? In any particular instance?
I really want to grow. That's what I want to do.
Okay. I want to grow.
Yeah.
Now, what was the second force to that?
I don't really want to grow. I don't really want to do this thing that they're asking me to do, I guess.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
I don't know.
Well, that could be a good one, or it could also be that if you want to grow, life is going to show you growth in some ways that maybe not necessarily be in your best interest or ways that you want.
Yeah.
So the question becomes then, how do you mediate that? How do you reconcile it and bring it together? What are the influences? Are they my personality's influences and preferences from acquired conscience, or are they from buried conscience? Are they work ideas? What will I use to reconcile what I want and what is opposing it? You may now sit with that. It's not necessary that you answer it right now, but in engaging with you before, I know that you'll take this and you will sit with it and you'll begin to piece it apart and put it back together. Let's take another scenario then. Moving further into your experience, there's another point where you said, yes, I will take this. And then the second force was that it was too much. What was the third force that reconciled that?
I was going to set some firm boundaries to what I could do and what I couldn't.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And then that's going to create a new event. That's going to be part of the new manifestation. Is that right there? And then that, what Don Hale was talking about just a moment ago, that that third force and that new creation is like, okay, this is what I can do and what I will do. That becomes now what I want. That's a new dough, or excuse me, that's a new asking, a new first force. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a force that will be trying to work against that, mm-hmm. the holy denying. Mm-hmm. And then you get to affirm it together again with either a work idea or a life idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it can, the chain continues. So you remember in last week's writings and commentaries, it said that life is really event after event after event. Yes, it's this manifestation after manifestation after manifestation. And the beauty of this, of the law of three, is we can see the creation. You gave a great, great pictorial of how you can just see event unfolding after event unfolding. Each of these events has three distinct powers, forces mm-hmm. in them.
Okay.
And they look like one event, but you can parse them apart and you can see these little minute places where we can begin to bring in work ideas, where we can call on higher parts of ourselves to respond.
Okay.
Does that set right with you? Can you get with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it will bring an extraordinary level of peace and clarity to the moment as you continue to see, oh, I want this. Life is denying it in this way. I'm going to affirm it in a holy way, or no, you know what? I'm going to let my personality affirm it.
Right? Okay.
And then you can begin to see, okay, well, okay, that's what happened. Now what's the next moment? And it'll just continue to build like links in a chain for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lori.
I really appreciate that interchange that just happened. My looking this week has been greatly concerned with what do I want? What is my first force? Because over the course of my work, I've of course had many opportunities to see what a lot of the eyes want, and usually they have to do with self-protection or trying to be liked, trying to be the good girl, trying to get along and you know, just do more, and that way I can be more safe. Well, as I've seen that and pulled back from that, okay, well, that's not really what I want. That's what it wanted for so long. So what do I want? And so what's connecting with me is then the conversation that we just had with Marianne and with Don Hale. So as I thought about what do I really want, I kept thinking about that David Hawkins prayer that we've returned to so many times over the last few months, asked to be a servant of the Lord. And that is the closest thing to what I really want, yeah, is to be a servant of the Lord. And so when what I've seen is that it recontextualizes everything, so that they're really, I hadn't thought about it to say, like Marianne said, there is no second force. There seems to be a lot going on, a lot that I could look at as being negative and being even chaotic. And that in another time of my life, I might have seen as being extremely difficult and hard, and 99 people, when they would ask me, you know, what's going on. And if I told them, they would tell me and reassure me that that is really hard. And that's, you must be having a really hard time. But my experience is that it's not. It's so, I guess what you would say is the first force of asking to be a servant of the Lord is connecting up with God's wish. And the third force. And so there's no difference between the two. Yeah. When that is my first force, it's remembering that is my first force. Yeah. But I remember that every day. I remember several years ago, Pamela gave that as an aim for all of us, is to, upon opening our eyes, to say, "Here I am, Lord, I come to do your will." And Tom and I have taken to doing that over the years together. And that is the first force. Yeah. And, not saying that, well, anyway, I'll leave it at that. But I'm so grateful for this conversation we've had so far.
Yeah, this is beautiful. Thank you, Lori. I didn't foresee this, but I am delighted that so many are experiencing our first force of a divine nature that is automatically connecting with third force. I mean, isn't that what the life of Jesus was all about, showing us? God's love is interpenetrating every manifestation in all order. And we are connecting ourselves to it consciously. That's just so beautiful. That's what this community is, extraordinary. Thank you, Lori. Paco, I see your hand is up. Unfortunately, we've got to move to the next component here, but maybe there'll be a time in there that we'll have the opportunity to hear what it is you were ready to share. I'm going to try to keep the same flow going here regarding the law of three, moving into the law of seven, because what we had learned a couple weeks ago is that the law of three and the law of seven exist simultaneously together. So I'm going to screen share for just a moment here, and we'll begin to talk about what it is that we were looking at in our email this week. And it starts out with this beautiful, it's absolutely beautiful quote, that this is not a universe created in some remote period of antiquity by an external deity, but we're part of a universe which is the deity, existing in the eternal now, outside passing time, a celestial keyboard on which the notes exist and from which harmonies are produced by the roving fingers of time. So beautiful. So the law of seven, or the law of order, the law of octave. And the work teaches that this law of seven governs the succession of events. And so I can think of no better example of that than what Suzanne was sharing, and how a chain of events, manifestations, just continue to link together. And this speaks to it perfectly. The law of seven governs the succession of events. Don Hales was explaining the same thing in his experience, that what is created, the fourth force, that is the new manifestation of what's created, becomes either the first or the second force of the next manifestation. So there's an orderly, this is beautifully said, there's an orderly discontinuity, in every progression of things, in every series. And so with this orderly discontinuity, sometimes it takes a little bit of adjusting of our mind through experience and continued practice, where we can begin to see some continuity or some orderness in the progressions of things. And as we continue to work with the law of three and the law of seven, we might even be able to look back in our time body, the experience of our life, and begin to see how some past occurrences, major decisions, are chain linked to where we are right now. No accidents, but that doesn't mean there aren't surprises. And the next description is that the lawful discontinuity is preserved in a musical scale, which, as seen in up or down, any octave will show, is composed of unequal steps. So this is an important part of the law of the octave. So if we begin to look at this, let's go in an ascending form. We move from do to re, and each of these is a full note movement. And this particular diagram has a symbolism here of the percentage. And you'll notice how similar the percentages are in the change from one note to the next in this orderly law, in the law of seven. But then we have a couple spaces where there is, it seems like, a half of the movement. And then we go to another part, which is the full note, a full note, and another half note. And this is the interval percentage increase that it's referring to here. So this is called the law of the octave, and is represented very clearly with music. And that's a beautiful way to begin to see it. So do, re, and mi are equally distant from one another. But between them, between mi and fa, in this area here, there's a half step instead of a full step. We'll come back to that in just a moment because that's very important. The law of seven may also be called the law of shock, for an additional force of energy needs to enter the process between mi and fa so that it will proceed on course until it gets to the end of the octave, the si do interval. And if another shock or influx of energy is given at that point, the progress continues to its conclusion at do. And then the do becomes the beginning of a new octave. So the law of seven explains why when something begins, it just does not continue and continue ad infinitum. Now, hopefully you had the chance, or you will have the chance, to read some of the commentaries on the law of seven that are in book one commentary. And those are, there's a part of the recommended reading for last week and this week. But it begins to show you how the movement is a step-by-step movement, but sometimes that it degrades, if you will, or it breaks down, or it doesn't go very far. And it is because of these half note places, these half term places, where something important needs to happen, a shock needs to happen. If you look at this diagram that you're seeing on the screen right now, and you see this particular diagram, you see the perimeter of it, and imagine that it is like a tube, a test tube, and that water is being poured down it. So in this, between one and three, that narrow part creates a constriction and the water has to be forced through it. There has to be something additional pressure that's put on in order to get the water through the constriction for it to continue to move through. And so that's the do-si interval that we're talking about. As we further go down, we can see the same things that we are seeing in the diagram above. The si, la, sol, fa, all are full notes. And then there's another constriction or a place where another shock is necessary, again, to continue to push the movement, the energy down. So this is an example of a descending octave. The great re is considered a descending octave. That is, where are you starting from when you're looking at the ascending octave or a descending octave? One of the first questions is, where am I starting from? In this case, the great re starts with the absolute, and it is the will of the absolute that creates the shock that begins to form all possible systems or worlds. So we think about this extraordinary universe that is emanating from the absolute, and all possible galaxies, all possible worlds exist in this first level that is represented by C and is under three laws. And then we move to the next level. We look at our Milky Way galaxy. So of all the possible systems or worlds, we're now isolating down, or if you will, descending down to another level of density or another level of distortion with additional laws. The multiplication continues along the way. So now we're talking about our level, the Milky Way, represented by La. Now in our Milky Way, with all of its suns in it, we're going to further distort, we're going to further add a density, we're going to further add more laws to the level of our sun. Now under 12 orders of laws, the work says, represented by soul. Now in our sun then has in its sphere a mass of planets. And those planets are a further density, further away from the absolute, although the absolute is still in the 24. It is a further distance and further distorted, if you will, by all the additional laws that it's under. So we've got the mass of all planets of our solar system, obviously. So we're talking about Mercury, Mars, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, etc. And we should know that those influences from above are constantly influencing us. Scientists tell us that every moment, tons and tons of material from the solar system and from the galaxy are constantly coming in contact with us here on planet Earth. Now, we get to this place where the law of the planets is one mass, is under 24 laws, and a constriction is there again. And so a new shock is needed in order to help the energies continue to move through to the next level, which is the level of our particular planet, Earth, me, and then further down to the level of the moon, Ray. So this is considered, again, a descending octave and descending from the absolute. So let's talk about these shock points right here from just a bit. The shock points, we set up above that in the first interval, narrow interval, that it's the will of the absolute that is the shock that forces, moves the forces through to the next level of existence. Down here, though, the level of resistance is overcome by a shock, it's said, from our sun. So the sun then becomes, if you will, look over here as Sol, the sun now becomes a new absolute, if you will. And so there's another octave that is happening from our sun. And it moves from the sun, which would become then the Do, and all the planets would become the sea. And then it says that the shock that happens here on planet Earth and in this particular ray is La Sol Fa, which is designated as the organic life on planet Earth. And so organic life on planet Earth is that which is conducting major amounts of energy that are providing the shock to continue the forces down to Earth and to the moon. Now, in this particular email for this week, in this particular lesson, we don't have time really to unpack the side octave of the sun. But as we began the sharing tonight with Marianne's sharing, it was very clear that there's something else happening here. This octave is extraordinary, this octave of the sun. And that there are octaves after octaves after octaves. If we go up here and we look at our sun, it would be remiss of my thinking if I thought that planet Earth isn't the only one of our planets that is continuing with a particular octave of its own. That there are all the suns that are in the Milky Way galaxy, why would they not possibly have masses of planets and octaves of their own? So the work says that it's octave after octave, all built together, all part of the one great ray of creation. So these, the first of these gaps or discontinuities is bridged by the force of creation engendered by the absolute itself. The second is our biosphere. So right here we see that is the narrow spot, and it's our biosphere, that planetary level of the ray that is influencing and helping planet Earth by supporting life and, how do I say it, organic life as like a film on the planet. And that is an essential part of this particular ray. So humanity and all living things contribute to the workings of the ray of creation. So although we may not find ourselves in this great ray, we find ourselves in the first lateral octave. However, we are still participating in that great ray as a second octave or a lateral octave of it. We are contributing to the workings of it. And now the work also, okay, so this is on the exterior part. So this is part of the universe, if you will. We're looking at the universe. And the work says that it is really very important for us to study this. It's difficult to study this because we can't verify it. And there's a lot of things in Christianity I can't verify either. But through faith and also through thinking about the world of possibilities, we can be very open to the vibrations that communicate with us interiorly and say, how about this? Is there something to this? So studying the outside helps to put us under different influence possibilities, and it begins to change, transform our psychology, which is what we're so interested in here with the work, is our psychological transformation. Transformation into what, though? That's part of our self-remembering, is to determine that for ourselves. And the work also has an octave. And it says that this gives us an example of an ascending octave. That is where we start from and where we're moving to. So I'm going to bring up this ascending octave here. And so this is the octave of the work. And so the work starts, it says, with a do. And that is, we begin to come under the influences of the work. We hear it, we study it, we value it. That is the do of the work octave that is ascending upward. The next part is re, and that is now that we have known it. So we're working on the side of knowledge in the first part, the first movement. The second interval, we take the knowing and we apply that, the work ideas. And so everybody that you've heard talking so far this evening has talked about how they were applying work ideas to themselves. And the next part that comes with that, the next movement, is the acknowledging of difficulties. And often we either start with a do and we value something, we start working with it a little bit, coming under its influences, and then maybe we begin to practice a little bit. Maybe this has happened to you with a sport, maybe it's happened to you with a musical instrument, maybe it's happened to you in writing, maybe a career. And you begin to move up an octave, moving up to an octave, and then all of a sudden, the octave dissolves. Well, if a shock is put into that narrow space, the shock begins to connect us with the higher level, moving us up. And in this particular work octave, it says that understanding is the next step in the work octave. And it continues to move all the way up. So again, this is an example of an ascending octave. Now, let's connect the word understanding here with what we've seen below. So those of us that have worked with the ideas of the work, I'd like you to rehearse in your mind for a moment, what is the meaning of understanding? Understanding is taking the knowledge of the work, which is the do, applying it to our being, the ray. And then we begin to come under a new experience, which is understanding. So understanding is knowing and the application of the ideas, giving us a new experience, understanding. And then from that understanding, we can begin to seed aim in ourselves, and putting that aim not in the surface, but in deep places in ourselves, in our psychology, in our centers, where small eyes that really don't like the work and don't like to practice, don't have access to it. I remember planting my real aim three times, a life aim. The first one was far too insufficient. It was insufficient. The second one was something that was so absurd that in a moment of prayer, I heard the response of the divine in me that kind of gave me a smile and said, yeah, I wouldn't have let that happen to you anyway. And so I really spent a great deal of time praying and contemplating what my real aim, what my life dedication would be. And then from my experience from prior aims, where was I going to place this in my psychology so that it was not in a place where it could be manhandled, touched by small eyes, especially eyes that don't want the work. So our aims, our real aims, are planted in interior parts of centers. And from there we have a willing, and from there we have a doing, which is living the aim, living to be love. And then another shock comes in at this point. And this is a shock for me where personality falls away and self, real I, is now the new experience. The octave relationships in the Law of Seven exist in all processes, according to Gurdjieff. And examples of octave relationships are present in every project we undertake, from cooking a meal to building a house. And so this is from Kathleen Spieth's Gurdjieff work. So she gives an example of one. And here is the particular octave, the idea of a book. Now this is a descending octave. The idea of a book starts out with a do. A shock is needed, and that is the decision to proceed. We've got all sorts of forms of the books. Now we have to go to the next level, which is deciding on a particular, identifying a particular form, uniting with a particular form. Then Saul becomes the requirements, the laws, the requirements, the characteristics. The next movement is a full detailed plan. And then a shock comes in. We now move to different preparations that may be necessary in order to continue the movement of the book. The me then, after the shock happens, the preparation of the manuscript, the wills and the skill are in place. We prepare the manuscript, right? The printing and publication, and the completion of the octave as an actual book is published. It could be fun to look at your life, and for those that have particular skill sets, you may want to this week do a little bit of journaling or a little bit of time reviewing that particular octave in how it manifested. We might also look at some octaves that were incomplete, such as we talked about a little before, maybe a particular level of education. I'm kind of interested sometimes when or informed when we have friends that have gotten right to the end of a four-year degree, but are a few courses short of completing it. And you can begin to look at it and say, oh my goodness, look at the octave. There's a shock that's missing there that didn't get us to the end. You might also look at how you did complete the octave and how there was a shock necessary right near the end of the octave. You might find that in your life. So it says here, and this is a really good statement, everything that you set out to do can be called the beginning of an octave. And when you decide to do something, you sound a do. And if do is weakly sounded, nothing will happen. But if it sounded more strongly, you may reach the note re and even the note mi. But here, you reach the place of a missing semitone, and a shock is necessary to enable you to reach the note fa. This rarely happens. That's why in the work that it says that life is full of broken octaves. People start something and give up. And then finally, to connect this idea to the law of three, it is at the point of me that we often encounter the second force that mechanically leads to the same old outcome. So anticipation, calculation of second force, and the application of the first conscious shock of self-remembering at this point can lead to a possibility of being carried over the me-fa interval. A new, fresh arising can be born. The first conscious shock. So one of the things that we hopefully might have done in our work last week with the law of three is perhaps identify some of the work ideas that we use as the neutralizing, the reconciling force. Don Hale said, I think I heard two of them. He said that maybe it was I can work was one of them. The second one of them, I'm not sure what that was, but there are great work ideas. I can work. If I'm negative, it's my fault. Self-remember, external consider always, internal consider never. Ideas, these great work ideas that help to not only purify the emotional center, but they also serve as a reconciling force in these different notes in our octave so that something fresh, something new can be born. And finally, we must remember that man has created a self-developing organism. That means he only develops by efforts. And all evolution of man is conscious. That is, by conscious effort. And the law of seven makes things difficult by its very nature. Okay. The next part is the exercise for the week. And I'm going to stop sharing for just a moment. It's been a lot of words of me, and we have just a moment or two if we have a question. Or, yeah, Sue, go ahead. Thank you, Sue.
Okay, hold on. Star my video.
We can hear your voice, Sue.
Okay, sorry. I'm just intrigued by the example that was just given of someone wanting to write a book. And that was a descending octave. To me, that seems like it would be an ascending octave. So I'm just curious because why is it in a descending octave instead of an ascending octave?
If I said descending octave, that would be incorrect. It really is an ascending octave. Although the way she has it listed, it looks like it is a descending octave. But it really is starting at the bottom, the starting point.
Yeah.
Yes. So I guess what I'm saying is it could be viewed in both ways. She is showing it as the starting point is the idea of the book and its creation is happening from that.
Okay.
Yes. Like a music octave that you know so well, you can go in both directions with these.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good question. Good clarification. Gay.
That was exactly my question. I find the ascending octave easy to understand and apply to all kinds of things in my own life. The descending octave has always been a bit confusing for me. And so that example really confused me. But I wonder if you could explain or unpack a little bit more about the descending octave, which you just did somewhat. I always felt that the descending octave was more about divine help coming down. Now I see maybe I have some incomplete knowledge about that. So could you say a little more about the descending octave?
Yes. Yeah, the descending octave, I think for me it's really helpful, Gay, and I appreciate your question and Sue's as well. They're very helpful to us. And the the octave, it really depends on where you're starting from. That's the big key. How are we looking at it from? So in the case of writing a book, the book isn't written yet. The book is going to be an idea, an absolute, if you will. And then from the absolute, it begins to move down. So something is being created, but it's coming from a top-down influence. Does that help? It's coming from a top-down influence. Now, the work, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish, please.
Yes. The work octave gave us an idea of an ascending octave because of where we were starting. We were starting from the beginning, and so something new is being created there. And that's why I say it can be looked at in both directions. So for it to be most easily understood, where are we starting from? And are we reviewing something that's already created, or are we moving in the movement of creating something? Mm-hmm. Which direction are we looking at it from? Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for us to understand that they can go both ways.
Okay, I'm going to have to ponder that a lot and chew on it, so, because I've been in this other belief for so long that I never considered the descending octave as what you're describing. Yeah. I always felt it was divine help coming mm-hmm. from above, which was helping pull this ascending octave up once I passed the interval between me and Fa.
Yes.
That there was help up from above coming yes. down to meet me.
Yes. And there is. there so is, yes. Oh my goodness, I wish we could talk longer. I need to give up the microphone right now, but I would love to, maybe we can continue part of this conversation next week as we work with the homework for this week. So let me bring up the homework and let's keep this alive in our hearts and in our minds, and we'll talk about it more next week. Read through the email several times this week. Reflect and listen for any topic that comes to meet you. Perhaps mapping your own engagement with the work on the ascending work octave. Giving gratitude for the living God, this wondrous evolutionary cosmos, those who have prepared the way for us and our own evolving life as a Christic being. And finally, reading more about the Law of Three and the Law of Seven in the commentaries. Thank you all very much for your participation. Yeah. Marianne, I will turn it back to you.
What a wonderful evening. Thank you, Donald, and everyone. We could just keep going. So a closing word from Rodney Cullen as we pause here for a moment. Truthfulness is understanding laws and living in accordance with them. And then what? To know what lies beyond the level of truthfulness, it is necessary to have reached it. We all have powers that we can use when we love the truth. This is wonderful work. It fills us with joy. If the work is not joyful, it is not right. It is beautiful because it links everything together and brings it higher. The work is the truth, and we do not realize how high it is. Every question is answered in our work. It is simplified for us to understand. If we are open and objective, we will see how very simple it is. Work is becoming sensitive to and fulfilling the requirements of ordinary daily life. And so it does. Let us join in affirming and praying the prayer of God's love. That God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.